Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. So I'm on the road today. Made me sound a little different because I'm on the road today. But we have a big show given the events of last night, which turned out to be nerve-wracking and spectacular. But Jason Smith is going to join us in the next segment. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. That will be the lineup for today. I am rolling along. You know, Jeffrey, I've done a lot of shows over the years from the 2006 minivan or its predecessors. Not lately. Like, it used to be a very regular occurrence. And sometimes it got a little hairy, I'll be honest, doing the show from the road. So this is a little bit of a throwback show. And the only hairiness I have today, when I think about it, is I got my oil change the other day, Jeffrey, at Jiffy Lube. And that's fine. You know, you go to Jiffy Lube, you get your oil change.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me if I wanted my tires rotated. Now, I am not a guy who regularly rotates his tires. Do you regularly rotate your tires?
Only like when I go for service, but like I'm not someone that, you know, some people like schedule tire rotations, but like, you know, if I'm doing the, usually when I get my oil changed, I'm taking it to the dealership.
To the dealer, and yeah, then they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably better. So they Jiffy Lube, they always, well, look at this.
The old upcharges.
You know, right, you need new fluids. And, it looks like your windshield. But anyway, I've been trained to say no vigorously to that. But the tire rotation sort of caught me by surprise, and I said yes.
Yeah, I would say that's not a normal one that they hit you with at the, you know, the quick service.
It's not
oil
the normal
change
one they hit you with.
It's like an air filter or, that kind of stuff.
Well, but it takes longer, too. But anyway, sure. It's only $25. But the whole thing, operation, sounds different now. You know, it just doesn't sound the same. It doesn't sound quite right. And I don't know that Jiffy Lube is the group that I should be trusting. But anyway.
So you're worried about your tires
I'm worried. Yeah, my tires are going to explode here as I drive along or something's going to.
In fairness, anyway, that would have happened with or without the rotation.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so there you go. We do have a lot to talk about given the events of last night. And I will ask you this, Jeffrey. I want to start. Yesterday we dismissed, you know, without even thinking about it, whether if someone had offered you a one-in-one night between the Tigers and the Grizzlies last night, would you have taken it? Of course not. Of course you wouldn't have taken it, because you were assuming a victory on the part of the Tigers anyway. And so the real suspense was the Grizzlies, and you just wouldn't have done it. You wouldn't have accepted a loss to the Rockets, and you wouldn't have accepted a loss to Wayne. But was there at any point last night, as these two games were unfolding, sadly, beginning at the same time, so most of us are exhausted, was there at any point last night when if I had offered you a one-in-one split, you would have taken it?
Yes, pretty much during the entirety of the Grizzlies game. I felt pretty good about it. Like, even when Memphis fell behind, I still felt good about that one. Like, to me, the suspense with Memphis was how much were they going to win by?
Well, I wouldn't have taken a one-on-one split once I knew the Tigers were going to win, because then that would just be locking in the Grizzlies' loss. But when there was a moment when the Tigers were locked in a struggle, yes, I did in the end think they would win, but I wasn't sure. And so when they were locked in a struggle, falling, they trailed in the second half, and the Grizzlies were getting their ass kicked in the first half, I would have 100% said I'll take 1-1. I in fact, texted John and said, because I was thinking of this radio program, I said, I don't want an 0-2 night. That's what I said. I just don't want an 0-2 night. Imagine how grim that would have been on the last day of January. Boy, that has flown, hasn't it? How are you doing with all your resolutions? How are you doing with being the best version of yourself in this in 2025, Jeffrey?
Again, my resolution was for everybody else to get it together.
There you go. There you go. So, but that would have been grim, and I 100% would have taken, because I at least would have locked in the Tigers' win, and by that at that point, it didn't look like the Grizzlies were going to triumph because, well, all the reasons we know. And Houston, by the way, like, it is interesting. I don't feel any different about the Grizzlies-Houston rivalry series potential matchup in the playoffs today than I did yesterday. I don't feel any better about it. I don't feel any worse about it. But I really don't feel any better about it. Like, they got dudes, man. And that was obviously without Şengün. Now the Grizzlies didn't have Ja Morant. We'll talk about that. But they got dudes on that team. It is really impressive. And that was a wildly exciting, wildly entertaining night. In fact, let's start by talking about that one. In fact, let's start. Now, it's going to be a little hard. Normally on a day like today, we would do the celebratory highlights, and I would walk you through them one by one. Given that I'm on the road, the logistics of that are a little tricky. So we will just play a few highlights, Jeffrey. What do we have for the people that we're going to queue up?
Jeff, let's start with the final play of the third quarter. I thought this was kind of an underrated play.
This was an underrated, sneaky, important play. Yeah, go ahead.
6 seconds on the game clock. Clark gives for Laravia. Laravia trapped by Jayshon Tate. Has to throw it up. He banks it in on a fadeaway three. Ring it up. Put three on the board. A prayer answered for Jake Laravia. Grizzlies with 0.4 seconds left, cut it to 4, and that's where we'll head to when we start the fourth quarter. 96-92, Rockets by 4.
Yeah, it's different being down 7 and being down 4. You've been down, you've gotten your ass kicked in the first half, physically outmanned, only 2 3-pointers in the entire first half, down by 10. So then you come back, and the second half was a dramatically different extravaganza in the second half. You come back, you make it a game immediately, very clearly, you bow up a little bit. But then the Rockets reassert themselves. They're up by 7. That 3 from Jake Laravia, among the many things we'll talk about, I think you're right, had a potential to get lost in the wash. But it was certainly lucky, and it was a big one. All right, what's next?
Let's get some Santi in, because he was obviously a big part of last night.
Yep.
Kennard for the trailer, Jaren Jackson. Tate backed off. Right sideline, Aldama's wide open. The three is good. Bring it up. Put three on the board. It's a one-point game.
And great job by Jaren Jackson, Eric, not forcing into things, surveying the floor, and then finding Santi in the corner.
Santi was 15 last night, as you point out, an important part of last night's game. And then we got one more we're going to play.
We got two more, so let's get some Jaren Jackson, because obviously he was the guy last night.
Yeah.
Grizzlies need a bucket here. Bain ahead for Jackson. Brooks waits. Jackson runs into Brooks. Got a bump. The runner is good. Brooks picks up his fifth, and Jaren Jackson Jr. has a chance at a three-point play.
I mean, tough shot by Jaren Jackson Jr. that time, but again, this is when you need your best players to step up and make big plays, and that was certainly a big play by Jaren Jackson Jr.
And then, of course, we have our own Elam ending, Jaren Jackson Jr. at the free throw line.
Gives it to Jaren Jackson Jr. He's sitting there holding it, giving instructions. Jackson's free throw. Got it. Timeout, Houston. 8.6 seconds remaining. And the Grizzlies lead by 120 to 119 on the Memphis Grizzlies radio network.
Grizzlies win, Grizzlies win, Grizzlies win after Fred VanVleet's shot. Bad shot, honestly, given everything. Does not go in, and the Grizzlies somehow escape incredibly. With a really important, wildly entertaining and raucous victory over the Houston Rockets. We'll start with Jaren Jackson Jr. Obviously, the night began with the news that Jaren had been selected for the All-Star team, and good for him. I think we all thought he would be, but, you know, an example of how close it was or had to be was that Sabonis left off.
Yeah.
Sabonis left off. That dude is averaging 20.9 and 14.5. Like, in the end, and they should be enraged that he was left off, but someone who would inspire rage was going to be left off, and it could have been Jaren. It would have been insane at some level. Like, you needed a player from the Grizzlies, and just like you had Şengün from the Rockets, you sort of needed the second best team, second, third best teams in the West. But anyway, good for Jaren, who has, you know, you think back from where he started, the project that he was, really. And of course, he was not drafted by this front office. He was drafted by an earlier front office. And he has turned himself into one hell of a player. I don't think even those who believed in him and believed in his talents did not necessarily believe that he would become the one-on-one force that he has become, and that he then went out and showed last night. He was unbelievable. Obviously, he had the foul trouble. He doesn't play for 40 minutes. And so those have been critical of Taylor Jenkins for not playing his stars enough. This was a night where he very clearly shrunk the rotation. And Dez played 40, and Jaren would have played, I suspect, as many, but he was in pretty serious foul trouble. Check back in. Grizzlies down 5 minutes to go, basically. And it looked not hopeless, but it looked like, how the hell are they? Like, they've been getting beat by Houston all night. And he scored 9 of the last 13 points. I mean, absolutely tremendous. He fouled out Dylan Brooks. Obviously, after that crazy timeout that wasn't called, we'll get into that too. They fed Jaren. He went right at Dylan. Gets Dylan to foul him and gets the winning free throws. I thought it was on a night when he's very appropriately was selected to the All-Star game. He then went out and showed why.
Yeah, they were Jeff. I found the play by play. So he checks in at 5:28 and they're down 8.
Yeah, and at that point, I mean, I'll be honest. I'm sitting there and I'm not thinking they're going to win. You think they're going to win?
No, I mean, honestly. I was texting with Cobb last night. Like, I don't know how they won, period.
Well, what's weird is this is a little bit of a flip of one of the games that they lost to Houston. You know, like, how did they win that game? Well, Houston shot poorly in the second half. You know, Houston shot brilliantly in the first half. Houston shot poorly in the second half. They got a series of stops. Van Vliet misses the last two. I mean, the stops were critical, obviously, down the stretch. At some point in the first half, I didn't feel like ever gonna stop them.
There was nine straight
possessions that they got buckets. Like, you're like,
and everything felt so easy.
And it all felt so easy. And if they freaking ever missed, then they got the offensive rebound and, you know, crushed you there. It was like, it looked like, that's why I don't feel differently about this. Because of last night's win, like, that is a hell of a, that team is a handful. And that was obviously without Şengün. But
the only thing where I do feel a little differently, because I do agree, in terms of the matchup, I don't feel dramatically different. I do think it's important to, like, just get one in the W column so that you're, like, it's just not in the back of your head. Like, hey, we can beat them. But I totally agree with you. In terms of a matchup, I do not feel any better.
It was. I don't even mean that better or worse. I still feel like they're a handful. Like,
yeah,
I'm not
absolutely
saying you couldn't beat them in a seven-game series. I just think they are a hell of a handful. And, like, full marks to the Grizzlies for coming back and doing what they did. And, again, it was Jaren checking back in and then lifting this team to victory. It was just, I mean, there were others, certainly, who contributed and played well. Luke Kennard was one of those. Desmond Bane was, Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard have to be the,
I mean, Des is largely having to be the point guard.
He's having to be the point guard. Played 40 minutes last night. I thought Des was terrific.
I want to give Brandon Clark a shout out because he had, with Jaren's foul trouble, he obviously had to give extended minutes, and I thought he was really good last night too.
Brandon Clark really good, and Zach Edey was,
he was serviceable.
I was going to say not unplayable, but he didn't play much. Like in the second half, he didn't, played 17 minutes total, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was in foul trouble too, though.
So, yes, he was in foul trouble too. Brandon Clark, you're right, was very good. I thought in some critical moments. Now that foul, but there were, even after they came back, there were at least two moments when I thought, yeah, God, they fought hard to come back.
You fought so hard to come back and just lose.
It's going to be their night, right? And those two moments were when Brandon Clark fouls Jalen Green on the three.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, can't do that. But he missed one. He missed one.
Yeah.
And that was critical. And then Luke Kennard gets a wide open three.
I thought that was going in too.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. You're ready to explode. And he misses that. And they come back and they get the stop anyway. That's the thing. Stops were absolutely critical in this game. Not that they aren't always. But it was a stomach churning. And then the happiness and, the resulting happiness was that much sweeter when they get the W. Obviously, crazy-ass play when Jalen Wells is going to go in for the bucket, and the official calls timeout, says that Taylor Jenkins called timeout, when on the replay you can very clearly see that Taylor Jenkins was yelling, go, go, go.
Waving. He was the third base coach waving him home.
It was just unbelievable. Like, you do wonder what exactly did he assume a timeout?
Suspicion is Taylor probably went up to him, and said, "Hey, if they miss, I'm be watching. I'm wanting a timeout." And then obviously the type of miss led to a run out. Usually when you get that kind of miss, it's usually underneath the basket. You're not going to get a break opportunity.
So Taylor loses his mind.
Which I also thought was huge because, let's be clear, Dylan fouled Jaren, but that wasn't, the toughest foul of the night. And I do 100% think that that was because Taylor went absolutely ballistic on that official.
I think two things here. One, I think the official really screwed up. And had that been any other circumstance, I think Taylor would have been teed up. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. Because I'm assuming he was saying every word in the book.
Right, right. So he would have been, and credit to the official, that he decides to take it because he knew he screwed up. I guess you could also say that was played into the... It is interesting. There was a lot of fun last night. The job stuff wasn't fun. Looking at job, looking so mournful. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it was a lot of fun. Dylan going at it with Jaren, was a lot of fun. And then for Jaren to get Dylan, and you knew he wouldn't call for help. It would be Jaren Dylan, and Jaren got the better of him on a night when, just shortly earlier, it looked like Dylan was going to come in here and ruin the Grizzlies' night.
It felt like he kind of hit a dagger.
Oh, the three and then the and one?
Yeah.
And then he's flexing and, it's like, oh, man, you're going to lose him four times.
Yeah.
And the fourth time is going to be, who's going to be right in the middle of it? Steven Adams, who not only is doing what he does, is grabbing every damn offensive rebound, he's also a perfect 3 of 3 from the line.
And, with swishes, not even, the lucky, it was like they were just pure. It's like, what?
And then Dylan is playing his best for the best version of himself. You're like, this is back when I would have 100% accepted a 1-1 night because the Tigers were struggling and the Grizzlies were, I wouldn't say reeling, but it was looking tenuous. But
let's just say if it were a boxing match, the Grizzlies were playing a lot of defense and they were taking a lot of shots. They were not delivering many.
They were taking a lot of shots. And I don't know. I do think, yes, important for them to come back and get that win. Important for the mental health of Memphians everywhere. Important for the Grizzlies. And by the way, it just looks like a blast.
I mean, it just felt like a big game. And I know people feel a certain way about Reggie Miller. But what's undeniable, Kevin Harlan is just a big game announcer. And he makes it feel so big. And I just kept thinking, like, man, this is fun.
It was a hell of a lot of fun. And they kept saying, you know, they were talking about how you couldn't even hear.
Yep.
You know, so if you're wanting a preview of the playoffs, that would be a fun series. I would hope that you'd have Vince Williams, Marcus Smart, or some other reinforcements back by the time that we have to deal with that series. Obviously, missing Shingun is a big deal. Like, Steven Adams is great, gets you offensive rebounds, but Shingun is an all-star, and like the Grizzlies had a real hard time handling him previously.
I mean, the league has a real hard time handling him.
The league had a hard time handling him. So it was wildly entertaining. And the TNT stuff's fun, you know. I think it's fun hearing them talk about your team. It's also a little embarrassing when before the game, Shaq is talking about how he can't wait for the. Did you hear this? He said, "I'm. This is like just minutes before the game. I'm really looking forward to John Morant, Jalen Green matchup."
No, I didn't because I had on first screen because the Tigers started at 8. First screen for me at that point was Tigers.
So, you know, and this is well after we knew the Ja would not be playing. So, anyway, Grizzlies get the win. That was absolutely massive. Meanwhile, over on another channel, on ESPN, on the Deuce.
Yes, of course.
The Memphis Tigers emerge with the victory over Tulane. And there was a... And this, you're going to have to pardon my audio here because this is from the Jeff Calkins television set.
No one films his TV like Jeff,
which is as old as the Jeff Calkins minivan.
But maybe older.
This is deep in the second half, and Tulane unbelievably gets the rope out, Jeffrey. Were you even aware of the rope?
Well, I noticed the same thing you did. I just did not get my phone out. But, I mean, when I saw that in real time, I'm sitting there going like, oh, man.
Did you know there was such a thing as a rope?
I have not seen it. Then, though, we got the anecdote during, I think it was whoever the color commentator was, we got the anecdote that, like, Tulane prepared Memphis for court storming? Like, they were going over
They sent them the court storming.
That was the only thing that allowed me to go.
Because
normally I would put the loss entirely. Like, if I'm a Tulane person, I'm putting that loss entirely on the rope person. But when I found out that they had gone over, like, the entire procedures for court storming, at that point I said, okay, they were asking for it entirely.
Yeah, now, we had the court storming before, of course. And so I get it. They wanted to be prepared. But so the rope, for those who don't know, the rope is a rope that is deployed, evidently. It didn't look like that sturdy a rope, I'll be honest. Didn't look like it would be that effective, even given the relatively small throng of Tulane fans who might have stormed the court. And I don't know if that was going to be a court storming anyway, had they won. But they have a rope that they would use to help sort of deter the court storming. And you're locked in a titanic struggle. Titanic may be a little bit of an overstatement, but it was a close game still. I think the Tigers were up at this point. And all of a sudden, they show the guy with the rope. he kind of is hiding it a little bit.
Like, he was like sheepishly holding it felt like to me.
It's a little bit like getting the champagne out and moving it into the locker room, right, before the game is over. So he's kind of sheepishly holding this rope.
Aaliyah still has a bottle of champagne in the wine fridge, by the way, from Sunday.
And it almost, like, on cue, it's like Colby Rogers knew the rope was there. He felt the rope was there, and the reverse karma kicked in. Here's the entire way it unfolded on my ancient television.
Yeah, in Lincoln, we'll see what the finish is like here in New Orleans. 4:28 to go, and the rope has appeared.
I wonder if Memphis saw that, right? Kirk Dammes, SID for Memphis, sitting right there. I know he's got a clean control of the most important job in the world, get the rope ready. I think if I was doing it, I would practice in front of the team warming up. I think it's brilliant. What are you guys doing? We're just getting prepared to protect you guys if we storm the court.
Again, if you're just joining us, we said this in the first half. Memphis was sent the court storming procedures and protocols by Tulane during the week. That didn't quite sit well with the Tigers. Tyrese Hunter on the back, approaching 4 minutes to go. Rogers with bank straight down him, had the hoist, buries it.
Colby Rogers, who was couldn't hit anything. Couldn't hit anything. Missed his first seven threes last night. Ends up hitting four, including that massive three, and the Tigers win by 12.
Yep.
Honestly, win comfortably. Does them nothing in the net. You go and win a road game by 12 against not a putrid, like not one of the worst American Athletic Conference teams. Does you nothing from that perspective, but it keeps you in fine stead. The obviously ending the three-game losing streak. So you had the Grizzlies ending the three-game losing streak to Houston, and you had the Tigers ending their three-game losing streak at Tulane. Listen, PJ Haggerty scored 8 points, you know, and Tulane
and only two in the second half.
Yeah, which is his time, right?
Yeah.
Normally
when he has like a low scoring, it's. He has a slow start in the first half.
He's going to end up with 24, and he's going to just dominate. And he did not. But Tulane, certainly in the first half, played well. Plus, Apadia had a nice piece in the Daily Memphian. At one point, Penny Hardaway, may not have just been the rope, it may have been Penny Hardaway saying to Colby Rogers, "You're Colby freaking Rogers, man." Nice reminder, you know. You're Colby freaking Rogers. You're supposed to hit threes. That's what you do. And so that's what he did. Other sort of big performances, and you needed them because it was, you know, Haggerty and Hunter combined for 15.
Yeah.
So you had Dane Danger once again. Like, that has been huge. I mean, that dude is a problem down low. Had 19 points, 8 of 11, 10 rebounds. So Dane Danger was good again. And then P.J. Carter is emerging. Like, this team continues to, you know, even as they're just knocking up, you know, win after win, this team continues to actually find things and redefine itself. And I think P.J. Carter with 14 points is a big part of that, sort of, as they're moving forward. So I thought in the end, nice win. Nice win for the Tigers.
Yeah, I co-sign everything you say. I also thought it was impressive. Oftentimes, under Penny, particularly last year, when teams would zone them up, everything would just kind of bog down. Right. I was impressed with last night. They still kept attacking.
Yeah, and it's funny. They turned the ball over 11 times, which isn't great given that you're playing against a zone that's doing nothing to try to force turnovers, right? So it's not great, but I do think it's a measure of the fact that they kept attacking. And so, nice win. Like, Penny keeps answering questions, you know, and can you beat UAB? Can you build on your successful non-conference season and not collapse in the conference season? Can you win at Tulane? Now, these aren't massive questions, but they are questions we all had. And so, nice win.
I also thought the way they closed the first half was important. They had like a 9-0 run to close that because they'd fallen behind. They have the 9-0 run, and then they take the lead into the half. Like, I thought that was important because I thought they closed both halves really well.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to let you talk to Jason Smith and to Chris Harrington, who will be our next two guests, and then I will return after that. I'm on the road. I did want to, before we go, though, we didn't really talk about Ja yet, and I wanted to talk a little bit about Ja Morant, who was ruled out last night, shoulder. And then, let's just be honest about it, and what's interesting to me is and you can talk to Chris, well, he'll join us straight up at 10 o'clock, his column today in the Daily Memphian isn't really so much about the game and what unfolded last night. It's about Ja. And, you know, it was two things were A, just frustrating for everybody. I'm sure most of all Ja, that he's ruled out of that game, right? Like, it is, he has now missed 20 games this season. And I'm sure that is immensely frustrating for him, as it was frustrating for, you know, for the coaching staff, and I'm sure for you know, Grizzly fans out there. Hell, and frustrating for TNT probably as well. So that was, and then when you see him, he looks positively morose. Now, at the end, like, he was not up and wildly, you know, cheering on his team. Now, at the end, he did, you know, he actually waited until Jaren finished his on-court interview afterwards. And, you know, he made sure he congratulated. I'm not saying he was a bad teammate by any stretch, but he was very clearly subdued, right? I think, and again, with Ja, we're reading body language, and we're probably reading too much into body language, probably because we worry too much, right? But what did you make of, you know, not just the injury, but then the, I mean, I hate to do this because it's, you know, we're being body language psychologists here, but what did you make of all of it?
I mean, the only, for lack of a better word, the only thing that kept coming to mind is, that's weird. I mean, he was sitting on the second row of the bench. He was wearing what looked like a, he was dressed like I would be if it was going to be 34 degrees.
Where, yeah, he had his hoodie pulled up over his head.
Yeah, but he also had like a, it looked like he had like a full body thermal on underneath it. Which, again, as someone who can't stand the cold, like, I'm with it. It was just odd.
And we've had odd before. You know, there was the whole locker room incident where he was sort of, you know, stretch, you know, we've had odd before, and he's obviously, we've said this, he's an emotional guy. It could be as simple as, like, it's the wild, wild conspiracy theories. Like, I saw people speculating that he hates Adam Silver and he's never going to play in the nationally televised game. Don't be stupid. That's not it. It could simply be he is frustrated with injuries.
Yes.
And this game meant a lot to him. And he desperately wanted to be in this game, and here he is out again. And so, therefore, he is subdued and frustrated. Honestly, like, that is probably the most, that is the most obvious explanation for everything last night, right? He was ruled out.
I mean, the only other thing I can think of is, and I don't know how much of a chance he thought he did or didn't. The only thing I could think of is, like, we saw, like, Trae Young was acting like a family member died because he missed the All-Star game. Like, the only other thing, that was the only thing I could think of is, like, that Ja thought
but
he should.
Ja knew he was going to.
That's,
what,
I mean, that's
gonna,
how I, but I don't know what's going through his mind. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he didn't think that.
But even if you knew you were going to miss, there is, it can hit you in a certain way on the day that the All-Star reserves are announced,
yeah,
that you aren't there, right? Like what's the film Challengers is the film that had no Academy Awards, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so then the day of the Academy Awards, you might be feeling a little morose if you're the director of the right? It could be,
yeah,
that.
Because it comes real at that point. Like, even if you intellectually knew it.
Here I am, national TV, I'm supposed to be the face of the NBA, and, you know, I'm not an All-Star, and I'm not playing because my damn shoulder's hurt again. Like, it, again, we, this is all wild and perhaps irresponsible speculation, But we're seeing what everyone was talking about last night or thinking about last night when you saw him. Like, in the end, happily, the game overtook that, right? It emerged as a really entertaining, gripping, ultimately triumphant game. And so that became the thing, and that's a good thing. Like, that's fun. But in the end, for this team to be everything it can be, you need a healthy and engaged Ja Morant, right? Like, you need that. And so, in fact, it's more important than the W last night, dramatically so. His health and mental well-being is more important than any single game. And so it was weird. It just was. It was, you know, it was striking and whatever. And probably nothing, right? Probably nothing. Probably a reaction to an injury. You need him to be healthy in the next, you know, going forward for the rest of the season and the playoffs. And hopefully he'll be better spirits then. But it was just odd. There's no question about that. It was just odd. All right. So Jason Smith's going to join the show and talk to Jeffrey here, then Chris Harrington as well. And then I'm going to rejoin the show from the road. So we got a lot to talk about. Interesting. I'll be interested in Chris Harrington's thoughts on all of that straight up at 10 o'clock. Before then, I will remind you that this is the last day of January, which means that Valentine's Day is bearing down upon us. And you won't do any better. You can't do any better than one-stop shopping at Robert Irwin Jewelers, where you spend $99 or more, and you get a free bouquet of roses and a free dozen red roses, and a free box of chocolates. You don't actually get the roses today. Who would want the roses today? You get a voucher. Come back. Pick them up. Make someone extraordinarily happy. All you have to do is spend $99 or more. They've got a beautiful Love You to the Moon and Back pendants. I was in there just the other day. I saw all of this stunning stuff at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Incredibly helpful people. And $129 for the Love You to the Moon and Back pendant. They have the Diamond Essential Collection, Diamond Solitaire earrings, and more. Got one for Claire. $5.99, starting at $5.99. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, and of course, if you can get engaged this Valentine's Day, that would be the place to go for that as well. But again, free dozen roses, free box of chocolates when you spend $99 or more. They got five convenient locations, rijewelers.com. It is the Jeff Calkins Show on a Friday, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. You can follow him on Twitter on X at JasonSmith929. Jason, I guess let's start with last night. When you think about all that happened, Grizz, Tigers, everything in between, what kind of stands out to you as the most noteworthy?
Oh, I just think on a night that Jaren Jackson Jr. is named an all-star reserve, and we knew how tight it would be. So I think, you know, when you see that last night, we're all feeling, I mean, the whole city obviously is excited for him. But and then to be the guy who's led this team all season, been the one guy that's been there all season. I mean, you'd have to put Desmond Bane there, too, when healthy. He's been out there. Last night, what, Bane's going 40 minutes. But Jaren Jackson Jr. has been your stud, your rock, your anchor this year. And there he is hitting the two go-ahead free throws, very calmly sinking them to give you the win. And afterwards, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about Ja, and that's certainly a part of this story. But I think the headline was sort of what we saw at the end where, you know, Ja is waiting on Jaren Jackson Jr. to get done with his on-court stuff and come off the floor and give the big man the dap he deserves, having watched it from the sideline. You know, your leader walking off on a night he's named an all-star. Last night was all about, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, that and some key plays by some other guys, Kennard, yeah. Santi were big for you, but it was Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, night last night you're an all-star. And last night, I tell you what, it looked like his team. You know, we've long called this Ja Morant's team. This has been Jaren's team this year. And last night it was, fittingly so, Ja was there to dap him up for it.
No, I'm with you. I don't want to belittle the contributions of other players, but in the end,
hey, it was clear out, let the big fella go to work. And then to me, the other big part of it is it wasn't just the scoring. It was, hey, they weren't really getting a whole lot of stops unless he was on the floor. Like to me, last night was like I'm an all-star, here's my big stage, I'm showing you, like, this was earned.
Right. I mean, the foul trouble limited, and you figure there might have been even more. And again, I don't want to take away from the 40 minutes Desmond Bane played, because he looked banged up. He was tired,
he was gutted
obviously.
Out.
And you know, Jaren doesn't have a chance to win that game from the line if Desmond Bane and out there for all 40 of those minutes. And let's be real, you were getting just absolutely killed on the defensive glass for you, on the offensive glass for the Rockets.
Really, either side, they were getting killed.
Those
in the
guys
glass.
Are, you know, bringing them. So just even, you know, was it Jaren that tapped it out at the end? Somebody
yes.
did.
Yeah,
either
Jaren,
way,
Jaren like basically,
guys,
yeah, knocked it to like yeah. midcourt, which
keeping
didn't allow them to get
shot,
a second. Yeah,
right. Keeping that second shot from happening, which it felt like was killing you. That entire game felt huge. And so, yeah, man, it was just sort of representative of the end of the season that Jaren had given you. It's sort of an all-star finish there. But some big efforts. And, again, you had to get it, man. On a night that Şengün's out, you know, you've lost three to him, and you're coming off your worst performance of the year. So I thought as big a regular season win as you can get, and hopefully you can get Ja Morant back in and sort of reincorporated here soon as well.
What did you make of Ja?
I don't want to. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, what was clear is that he wanted us to see him.
Yes.
You know,
totally.
Most time you're sitting on the second row, right? Then you're sort of, well, that second row guy. Like, we don't see those guys. A lot of times, you know, whether Ja's front row, second row, we don't pay attention to the second row. Ja had a yellow jacket on and a shiesty mask, man. Like, what are you the entire time? He doesn't take the mask off. You're asking for eyes to be on. He obviously wanted us to see him disappointed. Now, was it the fact that you're not an all-star? Is it the fact that you're not playing and you're disappointed by the injuries? Is it the fact that, you know, you're averaging a career low in minutes? And frankly, there are probably some of your peers right now that would say you're average, you know, averaging 20 points. We all know, obviously, you know, in terms of Ja's potential and what he can be, you know, that it's blasphemy, but it's reality right now. And maybe that reality is sort of all of it accumulated. And again, being out, you know, small things can affect Ja. Maybe all that accumulated added up to the, you know, what was clearly a guy who was sullen and wanted us to know it. You know, I appreciated the way I thought Harrington called it like it was in the column, where as Taylor Jenkins is asked afterward about Ja and tries to dismiss it by saying, well, you know, Ja was in the huddles encouraging folks. Man, Chris wrote what he saw, which is, you know what, Vince and Marcus were, and so was Cam Spencer, but Ja wasn't. And then at the end, he stands up and everything else. And so I appreciated there the sticking with what your eyeball saw, because the Grizzlies were clearly trying to downplay this, dismiss it, whatever verb you want to use. They don't want it to be a story. It absolutely was a story. Because, again, that, you know, what are we witnessing here? Are we witnessing a team that's going to stick with this change of offense? And you might have a Ja Morant that isn't, you know, putting up the kind of numbers he did when you were running him off the screen and everything was going through. If that's what this is going to be, well, we're going to have to find some way to, you know, because we know how much, as Chris wrote, mood matters with Ja, you know, either to make him happy, find the adjustments, one thing or the other, or have we reached a different point where maybe this should be Jaren Jackson's team. Maybe this should be Desmond Bane's team. I don't want to, you know, again, that's why I hesitate when we're talking about a guy that's just sitting on the bench. But, again, he made last night a story with the look, with the appearance. It didn't have to be that way. As far as I'm concerned, with as much time as Ja Morant has missed this year and as much time as he's missed now for his career, I think I saw a note yesterday. It was like 58% he's played in 58% of the possible games. If I'm Ja Morant and I'm watching my guys go out there and try to salvage, you know, what's left of this series and get this, what feels like a very important regular season win against Houston, I'm up front. I'm watching Jaren and Bane be pros. I'm leading the bench mob. I mean, I'm the face of the organization, right? And a lot of times, you know, what you should be, I guess what you hope of your leaders is that they're that. They're not just leaders that talk the talk, but guys that walk the walk, right? The guys that will get on the floor. That's who guys get behind. If you're willing to do the dirty stuff, and in this case, the cheering, oh, man, that what does that show? That shows you're willing to do anything. That's a face right there. And instead, Ja was willing to sulk and wanted us to know he was sulking on the second row. And so, again, I just, you know, what you'd hope to see just in terms of you see Jaren and Bane out there being pros. You'd like to see that on a nightly base from Ja. I don't think we're there yet. That said, I realize, again, he's got a bunch of layered stuff that could be affecting him right now. But at some point, you got to work through it and be a pro. And I think being a pro includes when you're not playing and sort of your attitude, and because you know darn well everybody's got eyes on you. I just think if that was Michael Jordan sitting back there, and the story it would have been if you know, Michael sitting back there with a ski mask, with a shiesty mask on, a big yellow coat, and everybody's watching him, and you know, the Bulls are out winning, the story that, you know, you just wouldn't see that. And so, again, I'm just surprised that we're here. And you know what? I'm going to be surprised to see, because he's made it such a story, and I don't think the Grizzlies are going to be able to necessarily dismiss this. He's going to be asked about it the next time. You know, Chris's stories point out they've asked for him in the last few shoot-arounds where the Grizzlies have not made him available. He's going to be asked about this because he's made it a larger story than it needed to be. So I'll be interested in what the response is by them, because somebody's got to tell him, man, look, you know, this is unnecessary at this point. And right now it's like, what's the deal? You know, somebody's got to ask him, what's the deal? Get this figured out, man, and let's get to some basketball.
I like what you said there. They can downplay it. They can try to dismiss it. But at the end of the day, that's not what made it a story. It's Ja.
1,000%. It's, look, you can, you know, that, and the Grizzlies are going to, and good organizations do. They try to control the narrative, but you don't have sheep watching. And when you're,
well, and it was also on national television.
When you're face of the franchise, whose you know, everybody's eyes are already on anyway, is going out of his way the entire game. I'm surprised. And frankly, too, let's talk about the other side of this really quick. You know, I would bet you that the Miami Heat, that organization, would have said, take the mask off. Like, what are you doing? I think we're dealing with an organization that, you know, let's be real, you know, is trying to figure out how to deal with its superstar player and hasn't quite sort of, you know, Taylor Jenkins before the game dances with Ja. You know, isn't going to be certainly.
He made it seem like it was possible that he was going to play.
I know they're late, but my point is, I just he's not the type of coach. It doesn't feel
no,
like
no. I totally
so,
you
know
what?
You. We're not going to do that here. And even if it's just get involved, Ja. Right? Forget the mask. You're a grown man. You can wear a mask if you want to. But you're over there on the back row, man, and you're sulking. If it's just Taylor, doesn't seem like the type that's going to challenge him. Maybe there's some coaches. Ime Udoka probably is a coach that would do that. I think Eric Spoelstra might be probably a coach that would do that. But Taylor's not going to do it. Them trying to find out, you know, this balance with Ja, that relationship. How do you keep him happy, right? Because we talk about how much mood matters, but also hold him accountable. I don't think we're there yet. If I was that organization, at the very least, I would have asked him at halftime, take the mask off, man. What are we doing here? They're going to watch you the whole second half. This is going to be a bigger story than it needs to be. I don't know if that message was not given or if it just wasn't received, but again, you make this the story. Hopefully, again, this is something to just be, you know, water under the bridge after Ja says, you know what, yeah, I'm disappointed. I was an all-star. I wasn't an all-star. Okay. Let's move on. Let's see everybody be pros
right.
The rest of the way. Hey, we shouldn't. We're too far along in Ja's career to be stopping and spending as much time on what's wrong, what's the mood, right after a win like last night, led by guys who are leading this team right now, and Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. Like it takes away from the job that those guys are doing. Josh should have been front row and center cheering those guys on, pull them within a half game of Houston, right? But with a hell of an effort down the stretch. And if I'm Ja, I'd have been the first one, you know, welcoming them back to the huddle. I'd have been all over those guys. We didn't get that Ja last night, unfortunately.
No, I'm with you, because on a night that should have just been celebratory, you know what I mean? Like everything you just laid out, Jaren making the All-Star game, a fun, awesome win, a gritty win, and you know, it should have just been a celebratory night. And we have discussed that. It's not like we've ignored it, but like this is another part of the conversation.
Yeah, guys, if it's Cam Spencer or if it's somebody on the end of the bench, it doesn't matter. the face of your franchise, going out of his way again to express what appears to be, you know,
it's one of the most visible
again,
players in the NBA.
And again, if it was All-Star, because plenty of, you mentioned it, I mean, Trae Young on the other side, you saw him look disappointed that he wasn't an All-Star, right? I mean, that we understand that, but then how do you go about handling it? Is that's the way last night? And then, you wait till the very end to finally, okay, get up and acknowledge, you know, in the proper way, in the really respectful way, what your guys had done for you. You know, and let's be real, you gave them the least you could do. Waiting on Jaren at the end was the least he could do in terms of last night. So, and again, shout out to Harrington for writing what he saw and not allowing the Grizzlies in this instance to tell their story, Jeffrey, right?
Absolutely. All right, quickly before we let you go, when you think about Tigers last night, I mean, I told Jeff, and you and I have discussed this, it's like sometimes you're having to find your own successes in this conference schedule. And is beating Tulane, snapping a three-game losing streak, the biggest deal in the world? No, but they're kind of having to kind of create their own obstacles right now and overcome them. I was just impressed with the way that they closed both halves because obviously it wasn't a great night from Haggerty. It wasn't a great shooting night from Colby until it was a good shooting night. You know what I mean? Like things were going against them, and they just kind of gutted it out. I was impressed.
Well, it's finding another way to win. You're absolutely right. Right? It was last night. You know what was it? You outscored them by 13. I think it was over the final 10 minutes or so, 10 and a half minutes. And let's be, go look at it. It was Colby Rogers who up to that point had done nothing. Was a zero in the scoring column, scored all 14 of those points. The four threes came over the final 10 and a half minutes, whatever it was. And it was P.J. Carter off the bench, all of a sudden looking like role player extraordinaire. A guy who is really, and was tweeting about it last night, his role's growing and with more opportunity, and it seems like he is maximizing the time out there. It wasn't just shots. He was getting key rebounds and everything, but Colby was obviously the guy, back to the point, that at the end of that is pulling that game out for you with his 3-point shooting. I think Tyrese Hunter had a layup in there as well that came off a nice pass from Dane Danger that had come out of the post. The point was the second leading scorer in the country wasn't involved in Memphis putting that game away. That's impressive because, again, when it comes to getting into that tournament format, you're going to have to find ways to win games where sometimes your strength ends up being something you can't rely upon. Last night, P.J. Haggerty, you know, you said it with Jeff and your episode. I was just like, y'all, I'm expecting P.J. Haggerty to break out in the second half.
Yeah.
That's what the second
half. That's what he's done all year.
Typically done when he has had a slow first half. He's going to get his money. He's going to get his points. That didn't come last night. He finishes with 8 points, 3 of 11 from the floor, and it's not even really, I mean, as good as Dane was with the passing down the stretch and what he had given you in the post, I love that they've gone to starting him. I think it's opened up a new dimension. It was the other guys stepping up for you, and you've got to love that because, again, if you can find different guys who've got the confidence at the end of games to help you to step up right in those moments, and you can build a comfort level in them, sort of as it feels like Penny Hardaway's confidence and P.J. Carter's going up, well, that's how you can get by, you know, in that tournament, just find ways to win. That's when it's just to survive in advance. And so Memphis last night, again, and then was so good in those guys stepping up that it ends up covering after a back-and-forth game. You love to see it. You love to see teams find different ways to win, sign of a good team, and very quietly, because we'll talk about we'll talk about Colby Rogers and the shots they hit. But Memphis's defense really starting to lock in. You held them under 40% shooting. You've now cracked the top 30 at KenPom at defense. No Penny team since I think it was 2021.